partly to, and it's in remarkable. Just hold it up there for me.
Obviously, this is radio, but if you look after your things, they'll stay looking fairly well.
Well, usually you say if you look after things, they look after you. You can't say that about a gun.
Well, it depends on what you want to do.
It depends on who's standing behind it or in front of it. But and give us a little bit of background about that actual musket, please, because obviously that has seen a little bit of action.
Okay, well, basically, to give you an idea, this is an Enfield pattern musket, sometimes referred to as a Brown Bess, first designed in 1722. It would have been used in Ireland during the 1798 rebellion. Unfortunately, it would have been used by the Crown forces in the 1798 rebellion. It wasn't captured.
So that would have been used against the Irish forces?
That would have been used against the Irish forces. So what we're talking about this year at the Living History Festival is showing the whole span of Irish history. Everything from the 17th, 18th, 19th up to the 20th century. So you'll be able to see firearms like this, reproduction firearms and the real thing. And we're also going to be having battle reenactments as well. So you'll see these in action against pikemen on the Saturday. We're actually having a group of militia take on a group of pike men and women from the Enniscorthy Historical Society in a skirmish on the battlefield.
Now, just very quickly, one final thing about the musket, because I'm actually quite fascinated, because it's the end of the barrel end. I'm sure there's a technical name for that.
It's the muzzle.
It's not at all as what I imagined, because I thought it would have been like the end of like a trumpet. It sort of fans out where you put the pellets in, but it's not. It looks like a fairly modern barrel.
Well, no, it's actually a rifled musket. It's a 75 caliber, which is about a 19 millimeter, or if you think in terms of a 12 gauge shotgun barrel, and it would fire a 19 millimeter projectile out to a distance of about 175 yards. Range wasn't a very big thing with these weapons. They were mainly used down to a distance of about 75 yards. So that's why you would see the redcoats manoeuvring close to their enemy, firing a volley, maybe two or three volleys, and then they'd engage with the bayonet, which is what gave the 1798 United Irish Men and Women a fighting chance.
But nonetheless, it would have made a fair mess of whatever it is.
At the time, yeah.
Now, the festival, as you have pointed out, with Mark Ashburn's historical links, actually you said this more so off air, but it's to Thomas Ashe, and that's the Living History and Cultural Showcase, and that will remember and celebrate his contribution. What contribution did Thomas Ashe actually make?
Oh, Thomas Ashe is completely unique in terms of his relationship with Ashburn. Thomas Ashe was actually born in Kerry, in Lispole, and this year is his centenary. He was the commander of the 5th Battalion of the Dublin Brigade, Irish Volunteers, and they achieved the only unequivocal victory of the 1916 Rising outside of Dublin. On the 26th of April 1916, they defeated a superior force of RIC at the Rathcross Roads in Ashburn, captured more arms than they can use, more ammunition than they could fire, and actually released the prisoners that they took afterwards. And it was Thomas Ashe who commanded them, worked with Richard Mulcahy to achieve that victory. He was imprisoned after the Rising. He was one of the senior commanders who were held in Lewis Jail in England. He returned to Ireland in 1917, and he basically pioneered what would be the electoral victory of Sinn Féin and the Irish Volunteers after that. He supported a man called Joe McGuinness, who was put in under the slogan, put him in to get him out, one of the first Irish Volunteers elected, and that returned them to the public eye. He dies, unfortunately, in Mountjoy Jail on a hunger strike on the 25th of September 1917. It's the largest funeral in Ireland, larger in fact than Parnell's funeral, and that reunites Irish nationalism.
Was it larger than that of Michael Collins?
I don't know about that, because that would be later on. That's during the Civil War. I'd have to check that one out for you, but it was definitely one of the largest. 30,000 people attend the funeral at the graveside in Glasnevin Cemetery, and Michael Collins actually delivers the graveside oration over Thomas Ashe's grave. And it's actually said of Thomas Ashe that, you know, through his death and his sacrifice, he recruited more people through Irish nationalism than if he'd lived 1,000 years. So for us, Ian Ashbourne, he's a very special person and somebody we really want to commemorate.
In passing, he was more influential.
This is, as is often the case.
Absolutely. Now, the event itself will showcase the weapons, one of which, obviously, we've just heard how described, uniforms, vintage, civilian and military vehicles from the past 100 years. The uniform I'm looking at here, obviously it's not from the 1700s, either that or the Mott's have been very kind to it, but is it typical in style of what would have been worn at the time?
Well, this is the uniform of an Irish volunteer officer between 1913 and 1916. In 1916, the Irish volunteers go out as a conventional army and they try to take on the Crown forces on a one-for-one basis. Facing the largest empire in the world at the time, naturally, it's a one-sided battle. After 1916, most of the combat takes place in civilian clothes. But for 1917 and for Thomas Ashe's funeral and for key points after that, the Irish volunteers would have put on their uniforms very much to make the statement that here we are, we're a legitimate force fighting for a sovereign country. So this is a reproduction uniform manufactured in Pakistan, but everything about it is correct.
In a way, when, and maybe this is my interpretation, but when we read the history books and we look at the movies, one could always imagine or nearly imagine that Michael Collins was the primary figure. He, as he put it in the, as was said in the movie, won the war or whatever. But do you think in certain ways Thomas Ashe has been forgotten in that context?
Well, I mean, it was one of the reasons why we set up BOACC, which is the Battle of Ashbourne Centenary Commemoration Committee. It was because the Battle of Ashbourne had sort of moved off or had been somewhat forgotten in historical circumstances. And Thomas Ashe as well had been sidelined by great men like Michael Collins and Eamon de Valera. Thomas Ashe is a wonderful character for a lot of reasons. I mean, he embodies a social conscience. He worked with James Connolly to organise labour in North Dublin on the farms. And he was aware of a lot of things in Irish society that maybe if he hadn't died would have made things slightly different. So he's a very influential person. I think all revolutions and all history is made from the bottom up. So you have a whole span of characters. And while one person represents it very well, I think all people are always involved in history.
I know also you're going to be screening the film Fingal's Finest. What will we learn from that?
Oh, that's a wonderful film that we were involved in with a company called Tile Media. And it tells the story of Thomas Ashe and Richard Mulcahy and the 5th Battalion and of that famous victory in Easter Week. The 5th Battalion were unique in that while their comrades in Dublin were static behind the barricades, the 5th Battalion were mobile in North County Dublin and into Meath where they achieved their victory. They were moving around with bicycles, cars, horse and cart. So they fight a form of mobile warfare which would be later embodied in the Irish War of Independence. So that's what you're going to see the prototype of in Fingal's Finest.
Now, you're also the chairperson, and you know what, I think it may have slipped my mind to actually mention your second name. It's Tala Collier. I do know you were in with us some time back as well. But, I mean, you're the chairperson of the Battle of the Ashbourne Centenary Commemoration, and you planned and organised the national commemoration last year. Has it actually taken that much time to put this together?
Well, it takes a huge amount of time because you're working with all of the groups. I mean, last year we were working with a lot of state involvement and we were very lucky to work with Meath County Council and other people. And Ashbourne is a wonderful community. We've got a lot of people down there eager to work together. And this year we're fortunate to be working with Dunamore Ashbourne GAA and with Trad Ash. So we've a whole cultural blend. But yes, to answer your question, it takes between sometimes 12 to 8 months to put an event like this together. You have a lot of organising. I'm a qualified military historian. I got into this from the point of view of an academic study. But it's extraordinary that you find yourself planning the minutiae of, you know, desks, tables, chairs, where people will go and that type of thing. But it's a great experience.
Okay, well, I get the impression you're totally at home and you're just engrossed in what you're doing.
Oh, absolutely.
Having a ball, so
yes,
to speak.
Totally.
Okay. Well, Tala, we're going to leave it there. We're heading towards news, but just very quickly, can I just remind you that for the latest information on the Living History Festival, you can find out more on Facebook. You can go to their Battle of Ashbourne 1916 page, or you can contact them at info@battleofashbourne.com. There's actually a few little bits and pieces I want to tell you about, and we'll do that after midday news. But Tala, thank you very much for coming in.
Thank you very much.
And thank you for bringing the musket. It's lovely. Thank
Anytime.
You.
Anytime. Thank you. you good luck.
Anish, Aine Craig, Air LMFM. Clean the worrying shop, touch in on.